powerful these things are, right? So,
and the U.S. has several of them.
Has several of them. So I think where it comes back, and I have seen this stuff online, you know, I'm not unaware of where this whole thing is going, is it starts informing debates about geopolitics, starts informing debates about migration and migrants' rights and stuff like that. And I would say this. I think it is one of these things where the naive version of economic growth people had in the 2010s, and I say this as an economist, where it's just all about having strong institutions and then innovation will grow and your economy will grow and flourish. It's not quite that straightforward. And I think, you know, depending on these two big buckets of factors, your economy probably has a natural growth trajectory that some people haven't looked at for a while. So there you go.
So what? Those are the factors. What part of it has to do with economic and fiscal policies? Because often when this is where I've seen this stat come up is often in the context of supporting the argument that the U.S. is a better business environment and the rest of us should get in line.
I don't think that's true, except in the sense of what is essentially circular reasoning and definitional, which is that the United States is the biggest consumer market. Yeah. You want to be located just as a matter of prudential, to be in the biggest market, because then Mr. Trump can erect a tariff wall around you. I think businesses naturally gravitate toward the biggest market, irrespective of regulatory condition. And in fact, we know this is true because in many ways, the United States has much more onerous regulatory environments on many sectors.
Right.
But businesses choose to locate a great deal of their investment there regardless, because that's just where the market is.
It's just a big, big, big
market. It's just a big market. And this is, I think, the lesson China has learned as well. You know, size is king. And, you know, if you are the biggest market, the sheer gravitational pull of the market is going to overwhelm every single distaste or people's preference. It doesn't matter. It just basically doesn't matter. So,
excellent.
To bring up a few issues. Now, on the show previous to ours, Guerrilla Radio, which I don't agree with all the time, but I did agree with their last half-hour segment saying Canada shouldn't be part of NATO, should not go to the 5% military spending. Now, Stephen, do you have anything to counter that?
I mean, I don't really have anything that counters it, but I have something that complicates it. The complication is that we're absolutely not going to get to anywhere near 5% spending because the way we're doing it to arrive at Trump's fake target of 5% of GDP is by counting police, healthcare, fire brigades, pretty much every single state-adjacent apparatus to make up the number. We're getting closer, I think, to like 2%. I'm not a big military spending person. Like, who exactly are we going to deter? Russia, China? Like it's just at some point you have to be realistic. And in terms of being a member of the NATO, Canada is a founding member. You know, what security purpose does it serve? Well, think about it this way. Canada is a member of NORAD, and NORAD is actually like a load-bearing mechanism for Canada's own domestic security in a way NATO isn't really. But if you quit NATO but stay in NORAD, you're just going to invite the Americans to ask you to do more naval patrols in South China Sea. It picked the lesser of two evils, essentially.
Well, the other thing is that you're saying the question is kind of moot. You're saying we're just going to go to 2% of GNP of military spending.
We're not getting anywhere close to 5% of GDP. That's just like a fake number people make up at conferences to keep Trump entertained. Nobody actually does 5% of GDP.
Should we even be trying to get to 2%?
I mean, I know would I go to 2% in an abstract vacuum where nobody, not every single newspaper columnist is advocating for it? Yeah, I wouldn't bother, but You know, it's whatever. Like, it's not, you know, it's a dumb move, but there you go.
Well, I would say there's a couple of things. I mean, being part of NATO and military spending is a foreign policy issue, not just strictly military policy issue, military issue, in that we have our allies, and if we're not pulling our own weight, and this is particularly true with Americans in the current context, if we're just going, well, we're under the American umbrella, we can just, no one's going to bother to attack us, then the Americans are going to look at that and go, well,
I mean,
why should we be protecting you, and why should you be considering yourself independent?
Magnus, he's going to attack us.
Just a second.
Doesn't matter what. That's an invalid argument. He wants to take us over, which is a crackpot plan of his.
I mean,
it doesn't
not necessarily. But it makes, you know, to the extent that they want to do that, makes it a much easier argument if we're entirely reliant on them. I think the other part of it is Russia has presented itself as a real threat, not necessarily to Canada yet, but to our allies in Europe. And the reality is that you can't just whiz up a military when you need it. You can't just go, oh, well, now there's a threat, now we're going to start creating a military. You kind of have to have the core there. I mean, so that you are able to respond when there's a need and grow it if there's also a need, because you need experienced people who understand that environment. And you can see lots of examples about that. You know, in World War II, Canada went from having nearly no navy to a huge navy, and there are huge growth problems in that process through the war, because Canada had to grow very fast without a core of experienced naval persons.
I just think, look, this is one of the rare issues where, like, spiritually and ethically and emotionally, I'm actually with Peter on this.
Yeah.
Which is, like, the whole premise is insane. I agree that, you know, Canada has obligations, and obligations need to be honored. But at the same time, you know, first of all, let's all be honest here. Like, the reason the United States is, trying to drive up spending everywhere is not because, you know, Trump really believes in the sanctity of treaty obligations. That's not what's happening here. What they really want is all, you know, their supposed allies armed to the teeth and behaving like vassals. I think the Belgian Prime Minister, De Viva, he said something at the same conference where Mark Carney delivered his favorite famous speech, and he said something much more prosaic. And it's just, it's one thing to be a happy vessel, and it's quite another thing to be a miserable slave. And I think we're leaving one end of that terminus and headed toward another. The other thing is, like, what are we doing here? Like, you know, the NATO summit was literally just held, I think, like, last month or something in Turkey. And Turkey, in many ways, is one of the strongest, possibly the strongest military members of NATO, aside from the United States. And, you know, this loops back to the earlier question about economic growth. What's, you know, Europe has had, you know, sclerotic, you know, scanty economic growth for decades. What's the easiest way to increase economic growth is to take a genuinely interesting and dynamic economy with high innovation like Turkey's and integrate it into European Union. And the Europeans have consistently refused to do it despite doing everything else. And, you know, some might claim various motivations, but that's, you know, by and by. So, like, I just think there's this weird idea here. This third thing, and this kind of really irks me, is there's, you know, like, in international policy today, every single negotiation is somehow a potential Munich and a potential March 1938 or whatever.
Right.
That is just not the truth. You know, there's also the opposite case where in 1914, all the great powers in Europe sleepwalked toward war by the diktat of train schedules and general mobilization, because general mobilization, once you turn it on, cannot be turned off. And I fear this is kind of the same picture. You know, we arm ourselves to the teeth, and one day we find out we cannot put down the gun.
All right. Thank you for that, Stephen and Peter. We're going to go with a complete change of tone and topic with Gardening with Embark. And then we'll be back at about 10:52 to talk about aluminum.
I got a few things.
Now for Gardening with Embark. Joining me here in the studio is Pablo Vimas from Embark Sustainability, our gardens expert.
Hello, good morning.
So we're now in week 13, I believe.
Yes, it's going very fast now.
And we're certainly seeing the typical fluctuation in the weather we get here in this region at this time of year in the spring. Because last week when we were here, mm-hmm. we were talking about the atmospheric river and the floods of water that were coming everywhere, but into our gardens as well.
Yes, yes.
Today, of course, it's a nice sunny day, but cold.
Correct. Today is very cold. We are in the -4, -1. So last week, as you mentioned, we were flooded. This week is cold, and we gardeners are just holding ourselves. We want to go out and start working and start preparing and planting, because we have
all our beautiful... It's time for Gardening with Embark. Joining me in the studio, as he does each week, is Pablo Vimas from Embark Sustainability. Welcome, Pablo.
Hello, good morning. Nice to be here.
Thanks for coming in. It's really hot out there. We are getting close. Well, you know, I would say midsummer. Midsummer for what it feels like here in BC, even though it's not according to the sun. But
yes. So, yes, with midsummer, we are in week 30th, and we are a month ago. We celebrated the summer solstice.
Yeah.
So it's like, oh, time has passed by. So, yeah, we are mid-summer. And this the weather is reminding us that, yeah, summer is really in full swing. We had this week very, very warm days, very sunny days. We've been watering quite often the garden to keep it nice and moist. And we also have seen plants that like hot weather, like tomatoes, they are stressing.
Oh, because it's the leaves, too much.
That the leaves are curling upwards, kind of protect themselves as physiological to prevent too much water loss. So so we have seen that. So the plants are tomato plants who love warm weather. Mm-hmm. They are finding that it's too hot.
So what can you do about that?
Well, we just continue watering. So hopefully the plant, we don't let the plant stress too much. But yeah, the plant is feeling the heat.
Yeah.
So that's the thing. And the other one is the corn. Corn is like happy because it loves lots of sun, but again, we need to keep it nice and water. And then we have all the cold crops that we haven't harvested.
Yeah.
Now they are infested of aphids.
Right.
So if you forgot your garden to visit 1 or 2 weeks, and now you go and you will see all your cold crops of brassica family, corn, cabbage, broccoli, kale, covered on aphids. So it's like, so now it's a time to be a good janitor, remove the wall plant and dispose that infested plant somewhere else, knowing your compost.
That's because they're a little too old and because it's so hot?
Yes. So hot, old, and the plants are stressed. The aphids, the insects find like this is our perfect site to multiply and live. So and then the other thing that we have seen is most of our pak choi, soo choi that we haven't harvested, they are in seed.
Mm-hmm.
So nice, beautiful pots. So remove it and dispose properly. Don't put in your compost, because now all the seeds are viable. So if you put that beautiful bush full of seeds in your compost, you are kind of like, okay, I'm creating a seed bank now. The next time I harvest my compost, those seeds are already sitting there waiting to germinate.
Yeah, you're going to have a mess in your garden.
that you bring lots of weeds to your own garden. Extra work without thinking in advance. Yeah. So that's good with us. So, and herbs. Mm-hmm. We at the moment have lots of thyme.
Yeah.
And wow, if you go to the plants at the moment, there is a cloud of tiny little bees, native bees, very, very tiny. And they are just from one flower to another. It's just, it's just to see how nature it is. They are not, because we are used to see big bumblebees or honeybees.
Yeah.
But these tiny little ones, we right. tend to dismiss like, oh yeah, there's flies. No. If you really stop and bend down and look carefully, there are tiny little bees in there, going from one flower to another. So we have six plants, and all of them are bloom and with lots of wildlife.
Excellent. So, what do you know? What those little bees are? What are they called?
Oh no, that is another thing that I should myself stop and try to identify the little bees. Yeah, but so I, as I say, we are used to the big bees, but these are tiny little bees we tend to dismiss.
Right.
So now that our oregano and thyme went into flower, we are thinking again, shall I harvest? Mm-hmm. Even with flowers? So I will say yes. Make sure that you trim very nice, close to the ground. Not too close, but close enough so we leave some space, a part of the plant for the next can have a next grow. And then we bunch down. We bunch it with thyme before cutting it.
Right, so that's,
you make a bunch, and then you tie it with twine, and then you trim it, you cut it. So then you have little bunches that you can hang it and air dry. And so later you can just crunch them or use as you need it. Or you can cut it and open it up, spread it, so, and then you can use with sage and rosemary and oregano and thyme, and then you make your bouquet garnier. So a nice selection of a bundle of different herbs that can be used later. Again, when it's all dry, you can just crunch them on top of your salad, on top of your fried potatoes, or use for seasoning your broth. Yeah.
So with the plants themselves, once you bunch them and cut them off, do you leave the plant to grow some more, or do
yes,
you?
Yes,
do you
most of our herbal plants are perennials.
Okay.
So they live 3 or more years. Right. So yeah, so once we trim it, they will start again regenerating with new shoots, and the plant continues growing. We need to keep the plant nice and compact, because as oregano tends to spread and suddenly becomes a weed, thyme is kind of more contained, but still we want to keep a nice shape.
Right.
Also, we have lavender. So the lavender flower, the flowers died, and now it's just nice flower stalks in there, and we have harvest those to make some potpourri.
Yeah.
So we cut it, trim that, and as well at this time we are shaping the plant as well. So we're trying to make it into a nice circumference, kind of a nice shape for the plant for the next season. So, and it's interesting because these little stalks of the flowers now have seeds.
Right.
So if you shake it there, lots of tiny black seeds will drop. So like, hey, we have seeds from lavender for our next time. So the other plant that we have is lemon verbena. Lemon verbena is a bush, but didn't like winter. So over the winter, all the leaves went, fell, and it was taking a time to sprout again. But now it's big and there are lots of branches. So again, these are lemon verbena we use for making tea. And the tea,
do you use the leaves?
The leaves, yes. Yeah. We use the leaves for making tea. So now is the time to as well to trim the plant, give it some shape, and collect the leaves, dry them out. And if you want to crunch it or just keep it nice, a full leaf, that's for winter. Because that tea of the lemon verbena kind of warms our core during winter days. Right. So yeah, so now is the time to, all these beautiful things in there. Time to start harvesting and preserving. And now with this sun, so warm, and no rain in the forecast, so it's like we put the spread our herbs in a table in the garden.
And just let them bake in the sun.
Yes, and bake in the sun, and after a couple hours in the full sun, they will be nice and dry. So,
Excellent.
So that's with our garden, with our herbs that we have in here. And again, if you have in your own garden, try to keep your harvesting your herbs as often as you can. Mm-hmm. Mint is not our favorite plants here in the garden because it tends to spread. But the other thing that we have is a bit of lemon balm that we just replanted because, again, it's another plant that tends to get wild and spread everywhere. So, yeah, lemon balm and mint, we have two small patches, and the plants are rather new, so we just leave it there at the moment for hopefully next year we will be harvesting them.
Excellent. Well, as always, a busy time in the garden.
It is. And it's time to start thinking how I'm going to preserve my produce. And so there are lots of information on YouTube and social media on how to preserve your, for instance, cabbages. Now you may have one cabbage, two cabbages. Mm-hmm. two or more cabbages, you are really thinking, what am I going to cook with this? But this amount of food that's coming, time to start thinking how I'm going to preserve for the next few weeks. With Embark, we are happy to have as much produce as we have it in order to share with our members of the SFU community. Yeah. So through our food rescue program.
Yeah, and that's every Thursday.
Over in
Sable Hall.
Yes. Yeah. We share with the community, and as well, when we have a bit extra, we as well are sharing with the food pantry, which is open on Fridays here in the Student Union. So, we are happy to have. And the other thing is, we harvest and we are freeing space.
Yeah.
And one thing that most people think, like, nothing is planted, I don't need to water. That is no real good, because remember, all living things in the garden and in planet Earth, they need water.
Right.
So if we want to keep a healthy soil with lots of bacteria, fungi, and invertebrates, they also need water. So if you harvest your garden, you harvest your cabbage, your kale, and don't leave the space dry.
Right.
It's an empty space, but you keep watering like a crop will be growing in there, because all these good
things... You need to
things,
keep that soil ecology healthy.
Yeah, healthy. So... Because you know, it's nothing growing in there. Why I'm going to water? Oh no, you really need to water, because next day I'm going to put some radishes, some spinach, and you don't want to have a poor soil.
Right. Excellent. Well, thanks for all those tips, Pablo.
Oh, welcome. Glad to share with him.
Yep. Pablo Vimas of Embark Sustainability. Tell us a bit more about Embark.
So Embark is a nonprofit organization. It's based in the Simon Fraser University here in Burnaby campus, where we have two learning gardens. So if you are interested in developing your gardening skills, you're welcome to join us. Yep. We host gardening cohorts every semester. We run on Thursdays between 11 and 12:30. As well, we have another which called Climate Equity, and it's a group of students who meet, talk about climate, effects of climate, how to address that, and each semester they organize a nice workshop, so for wide workshop. Then that we have, if you're into photography and videography as well, now we are calling to people to come and help us to keep our social media channels running. So you're welcome. So as well, there is that. We are at the moment, we're calling for people interested in that. And then food rescue is running as well. We need help. And so all that, what we do is in our website, embarsustainability.org, or through our social media channels at embarsustainability.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Pablo. Pablo Vimas of Embark Sustainability. We'll see you next week.
See you next week.
Tuesday on Speak Up, Danny will be sharing his interview with New Westminster social planner Christina Rucci on the city's summer spice drive. Later in the hour, what to expect from Tuesday's Burnaby City Council meeting. That's all tomorrow on Speak Up at 10 a.m. Coming up in about five and a half minutes is Democracy Now! But we have a little time here for Peter.
Yes.
We're going to talk about aluminum.
Well, the thing is, even with the tariffs, the United States is still getting 50 to 60% of their aluminum from Canada. Actually, it's two-thirds that they have imported. The other thing is that one of their aluminum smelters is coal. The power is coming from coal. Interesting, mainland China is actually the predominant aluminum smelter. And they have 72% is coal. The other one is hydroelectric in mainland China. So actually here in Canada, we're doing it the proper way as such. So, I mean, he's really doing a nonsensical content. It's only, he doesn't,
so they're imposing a tariff on a good that they can't replace domestically anyway.
Right. The other thing is that only 43% of aluminum cans are recycled in the United States. In Canada, it's 71%. In Europe, it's 76%. There tends to be either 1 cent or 2 cent American for each can. Mm-hmm. And that sort of, I mean, here in Canada, we don't even have the penny anymore, by the way. But so that's,
well, I know with most recyclable cans, at least in Vancouver, you can just set it down on the sidewalk and someone will come and collect it eventually and it will get recycled.
I think garbage bins have little receptacles where you just put the cans.
But what I'm saying is, even if you can't be bothered to dispose of it properly in a recycle bin or whatever.
Yeah.
If you just leave it on the sidewalk, at least in Vancouver, that may not be the case in some of the suburbs, someone will come along and collect it, put it in their bag, and take it to the return depot.
zero guilt.
Stephen, is it 5 cents or 10 cents now for a?
It's been a while since I've been to the last depot. So.
10 cents. 10 cents per item.
Okay.
And they used to have differential rates, you know, smaller items were 5 and some were 10 and some were 20 cents or something like that. Now it's all 10 cents for everything.
Well, that sure explains why it's 43% in the United States, because one or two, even with the stronger American dollar, it's not
strong enough
in Canadian. And so we can see the other thing about it is it does not exist as a pure element in the natural world. There's alumini. Alumini is aluminum 2, oxygen 2. It's not the H2O, so it's the aluminum 2, O2. So it's sort of interesting that and then it's not even that in the natural world. It's bauxite. And there's a compound of that. There's a thing of that, which is aluminum 2, oxygen 2-H2O, but then that's mashed up with ore and so on.
Right.
So it's really a mismatch. It's not even a compound in the natural world. It's sort of like, I guess Kool-Aid doesn't become part of the molecular structure of the water, mm-hmm. does it? No. It's something like that.
And of course, the reason BC and Quebec are big producers is because they have available hydropower.
It's mostly a power question. Right? Yeah. If you've got cheap power, so I guess sooner or later.
And do they not specifically need electricity? It's not just about power. Whatever power you have has to be turned into electricity as part of the smelting
like
process.
That. Yeah.
But we don't have we don't mine bauxite.
No,
here.
But we produce it here, or we produce aluminum here.
But we smelt it because we don't produce it out of nowhere.
But we have the hydropower to make it economic to produce. Like in the case of the places in BC, they've created their own dam to generate their own hydropower. They're not necessarily even pulling off the main BC hydro grid.
So, in fact, this was... I'll briefly say this. Rafe Mayer, 30 years ago, was talking about Alcan, just wanted to go directly into the hydroelectric business, and they wanted to block off a salmon run river, I think. Mm-hmm. And Rafe Mayer's radio show, which we weren't around then, so he wasn't the competition, so he kind of stopped it with but it's interesting that they were at one time just, why don't we just get into the electrical power business?
It would have been a better business for them. Minus the salmon run, I guess.
Well, whose side were you taking at the time, Stephen?
I probably wasn't here, but probably the salmon. But probably the salmon.
You're taking Rafe Mayer's side, okay?
I would take the salmon too, just because once you destroy those rivers, you don't can't necessarily get them back.
It's kind of sad that that corporation went like that. Okay,
we're out of time. Democracy Now! Is coming up in just a few seconds. Stay tuned for lots more great programming here on CJSF throughout the day.
All right.